Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to episode 156.
Have you seen the gas prices lately?
Of the In-Between podcast, where you'll discover the tools to build a marriage and family that you love. My name is Daniel Im.
And I'm Christina Im.
All right. Seriously, though.
Yeah. Like, have you actually seen the gas prices? Those are numbers that I never thought should be put together. Mm-hmm. Well, Daniel, do you remember at the start of the pandemic when gas prices were so affordable?
Oh, yeah. We just didn't have anywhere to go.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I remember thinking, can we just go fill up our car and drive around just so I can see that it costs less than $40 to fill up my tank?
Yeah, I know. And for my car, it was like $20.
Can you imagine a motorcycle? Motorcycle might be like $3.
Yeah, I know. And now it's $90 over $100. And
yep. Very, very easily.
More than double the cost, right?
Exactly. Well, the rising costs of gas, groceries, and pretty much everything you need in life. Are you feeling the strain like we are? Well, today we're so thankful to be talking with Bob and Linda Lotick.
Oh, is that how you say their last name?
I sure hope so. If we said it wrong, I truly apologize.
L-O-T-I-C-H.
Yes.
Yes.
Bob and Linda, I am so sorry. We actually forgot to get that checked out. Yeah. So
we're
apologize.
Just having so much fun.
I know,
hanging,
I know.
Talking
I'm
about Nashville.
So much. Yeah. Exactly. Well, we're going to talk to them about the honest question, finances are killing my marriage. What do I do?
Y'all, this was an incredible episode. Right from the get-go, you hear about Bob finding himself at his breaking point in his early 20s, overwhelmed by debt, stranded 1,000 miles from home with only $7 to his name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is compelling. Like, I just wish we could keep the episode going. Like,
exactly.
We just didn't want to
more and more about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bob and Linda are the founders of Seed Time Money. And after crying out to God for wisdom and discovering a simple, biblically inspired formula, he reached a level of financial freedom he never dreamed of possible. Yo, he paid off his house by age 31,
mm-hmm.
and they reached a personal goal of giving away $1 million by age 40.
Yeah,
and I don't even think they're, I think they're in their, by age 40, so they must be in their 40s,
right?
I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
Well, for the last 14 years, Bob and Linda have shared their lessons with over 50 million readers and listeners on their award-winning website, podcast, and courses. We will link to all of that in our show notes, inbetween.org/episode156. Bob and his wife, Linda, they live in Franklin, Tennessee with their three beautiful children. Let's jump in, y'all.
Well, Bob and Linda, we're so glad to have you on our podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, guys. We're excited to be here. We're honored to be here. Excited to chat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's special that there's the Nashville connection going on
exactly.
here, too. Yeah. So yeah. There's a lot of restaurants and people and everything down there that the kids and us are like, oh, we should go visit. We should go back.
Yeah. Soon and very soon.
Yes.
Well, we would love to hear about your journey with money. Bob, you mentioned on your website that you've reached a level of financial freedom that you never dreamed possible, paying off a house by age 31
what?
And even reaching
Goodness.
A personal goal of giving $1 million away by age 40. So tell us the truth.
Yeah.
Are you a trust fund kid?
Or is that how you did it, Bob?
Yeah. I mean, the story wouldn't be that interesting if that was the case. I'm someone who, you know, in both of us, like this is our journey, really. Who has just been able to stand back and watch God do some really, really crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like where I come from, this doesn't happen. Like, you know, for both of us,
absolutely.
Like growing up, we didn't know anybody who paid off their house, like let alone that young in life. You know, and we can get a little bit more into this, wherever you want to take this conversation. But in terms of that giving goal, like, you know, if you would have asked me that 10 years ago, it's like, I would have been like, there's no way ever, never. Like, it just seems so impossible. But it's just been really cool as we've kind of yielded to where the Lord's led us down some kind of crazy paths. We've gotten to see him do some things that are, they've just been mind-blowing. And it's been really fun to be on the journey with him and just watch what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, why don't you, I know all of our podcast families like, okay, come on, tell us. How'd you do it? Like, what? Give us a little bit more story. So, yeah, why don't you guys share a bit more of your story so that our podcast family gets to know the two of you and just a little bit into, how that's even possible.
Great. All right. So let's go back. Yeah. Let's go back. Okay. We'll go back to, I don't know, maybe when I'm 20. Okay. So my kind of journey started when I was 20 because I was just a complete mess financially, basically living off of a credit card in a city. You know, 1,000 miles from where we are here, didn't know anyone. I find myself, my car is breaking down on the side of the road, right next to this minor league ballpark. Everybody's driving by staring at me. I'm having this moment. And at this point, I thought I was really good at managing money, you know, and I would have told you if you would ask me, hey, are you good at management? I would have said yes, you know, but it clearly wasn't the case because the car breaking down was one thing. But as I'm sitting in this car, I'm starting to freak out. I'm having my freak out moment because I'm thinking of what's going to happen next. Like the reason I was driving is because I had to take my paycheck that I just picked up, my really small paycheck, to the bank so that I could then go pay my landlord. Rent was due in 3 hours and everything was going to work out fine. But now if my rent was going to be late, then I was going to have to pay a $50 late charge, which I didn't have because my paycheck was so small, it barely covered the rent payment. And so I'm sitting in this car trying to figure out how do I get this car towed to a place, get it fixed, and then get this check over to here and then over to there all in the next 3 hours. And I could see my whole financial life like kind of crumbling down around me as I'm sitting in the car that day. And it was when I, you know, out of this kind of freak out thing, I'm like, God, I need help. Like, because what I've been doing hasn't been working. And I've honestly been pretty cocky and arrogant and thought I had it figured out. Did a lot of the things that I heard, whatever, experts in the world teach me about money, and it wasn't working. And so I'm like, God, if you have a better plan, a better path, like I'm ready to listen. And so that was kind of the point for me where things just kind of kicked off and started. And so I came from a complete mess, you know, and you were pretty messy too.
I had a huge mess too. I mean, I was living in my parents' house, right? Like I'm 20, whatever, 21. And I actually had bill collectors calling me. Okay. Like what bills did I even have? Like I just had a credit card that I just clearly was... I wasn't just messing up. Like I was spending way more than what I was making and I was putting stuff on my credit card. And then when it came time to pay the bill, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough money to pay the bill because I've already spent it all on Starbucks and eating lunch and, you know, whatever else.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, it was pretty embarrassing, but I remember praying because I mean, I was terrible in math all of my life. And I remember praying and asking God, like, God, could you just please let me marry someone who's good at math? It's nice. So funny because Bob really is very good at math.
That's what I'm good for, guys.
Even though he was like not great with finances, I was like, I need to marry someone who's good at math. But in my head, I was saying, God, I need someone who can help me with my financial mess. That was the cry of my heart. Yeah. And along came Bob. The answer to my prayer is my knight in shining armor.
So back to your original question, trust fund babies, we did not ever agree to her. And so that was kind of where we started. And yeah, I mean, I can keep going from here if you want to interject, whatever you tell me thinks best.
Yeah, well, I would love to hear, and I'm sure our podcast family, their wheels are turning too. So both of you are saying, hey, we didn't come from a pampered lifestyle in our background families. And then both of y'all had your own credit card debt issues with paying rent, so on and so forth. And then did you both have those issues and then get married and bring those issues together? Or did you have it kind of sorted out? Because I think a lot of us, maybe that's how we feel, Linda, is I want to marry someone who's better at finances than I am so that they can take care of me and sort things out. But what if you marry someone or fall in love with someone who isn't great at finances? Then what do you do?
What do you want to answer?
Yeah, I mean, well,
where we were when we came together?
At the time, here's what I did. So when Bob and I got engaged, I knew that he was a few steps ahead of me and that he was starting to get his finances in order. Like he was talking about it a good bit. And when we got engaged, I was like, I need to get myself in a good position before we get married, because I was a mess and I was kind of like, I don't really want to bring this into our marriage.
Wait, you got to tell him about the shoebox.
So
there was an eye roll.
There was an eye roll.
Just for those who can't see.
But okay. No. Well, let me
finish. I think it's good just to give them. Okay,
fair enough. Let me finish with this. Well, what I did do is I asked my older brother for help. I was like, help me set up a plan, because I knew I wanted to get out of debt, but I didn't know how. And I think that's one of the biggest problems that people have. This was my biggest problem, is that I knew things were wrong, but I was refusing to ask for help because I was so ashamed. So my filing system was a shoebox that I kept in my closet. That's what he's talking about.
And what was in the shoebox?
A lot of credit card statements, some of them unopened, some of them, you know.
Okay, and so then we get engaged and we have the money talk, and then she slides this shoebox over to me, and I'm thinking, oh, what's in here? And I open it up. It's like, oh, okay, there's credit card bills that haven't been opened that you got months ago. It's like, all right, this is interesting.
Which is why I had debt collectors calling me, right? It's like, I was so unorganized. I didn't know how to organize it. Like, that is not my, that's not my strong suit.
Is that your natural gifting?
It's not my natural gifting. But for me, I just needed to ask for help. Like, I think that's what is so, and the other thing is, I had no education about money. And I think this is something that most people are living with and walking through, even as grown adults with children, is that no one, like, they teach us about all these really weird things in school with concerning math that none of us remember. I don't remember what a parallelogram is or why I need to know about it.
It's true.
But I had to learn it. I don't remember, because it's not applicable to my everyday life.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Finances are. And so for us to receive no education about how to manage our own money, walking into adulthood is really kind of a bummer, because you're like, well, now I've got to do all this adulting and I don't know how to do it. I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
As we're going.
Yeah.
So, So anyway.
So, to me, it was like, what I needed was I needed someone to teach me what to do, right? I think that's the answer for most people, is like, it is not embarrassing if you've never had any education about a subject to learn about it as an adult, right? But why do we feel like that about money? It's like, we just need to learn more stuff about money so that we can manage it properly. And it's like, we take a hold of our life and we tell our money where it's going to go instead of it telling us what we're going to do, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I love how, Linda, you were even talking about the shame aspect of it, because that's what it is, right? When we feel shameful about something, we want to hide it. We want to put, you know, credit card statements in the shoebox and not talk about it and try to, you know, avoid phone calls from the debt collectors. But when we shine light into it, when we ask for help from God, from other people who maybe are further than us in our finances, in other situations as well, that's really when healing and truth can come out of that.
Yeah.
So I love, thank you so much for talking about that, because I do feel like that is a big issue of just feeling shame with, and that's why we're talking about it, right?
Yep.
So I would love to hear as well, how did y'all go from hiding things in shoeboxes to giving away $1 million? And also, what's the why behind that too?
Yeah. So, you know, like you're just talking about, this whole shame thing and asking for help. Like, I think one of the biggest, like, if we step back and take the big picture, like, one of the things that we're really trying to preach, like, the thing that I, you know, is, I feel like one of our life's message when it comes to money, like, I see so many people who either do the practical things with money, the wise things, like, whatever, trying to stay out of debt or whatever. Or then, and I'm speaking kind of really of the church. I see that a lot, but then I see a lot of other people on the other side where it's like, they don't do any of that, but they pray and they ask God for miracles and they believe God for miracles and they have faith to see financial miracles. And unfortunately, I feel like there's this great divide where it's like, So many people fall into one category or the other, and we're missing out. Because when you do both of those together, when you apply the biblical wisdom of how to manage money, the Bible talks about money so much, and there's so much wisdom in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes about money. When we apply that, and then we also are in faith and we ask God for help to pay off debt, because I believe God actually wants to see his people out of debt. I believe it's something that he gets really excited about, you know, or whatever the financial goal is. When we combine those two things, there's something that happens. And we have seen this with, you know, our readers and listeners over and over and over again. We've seen this in our own life, that when you combine those two things, like, I don't know, it's like God just steps in and you see things move faster. And I think fundamentally that was like, the high level of kind of what helped us get to some of these crazy things that we're talking about, like paying off our house that early and giving away $1 million. But kind of coming back to the why behind all this, like when we got married or when we were dating, like I remember we'd sit in our car, like after church, we had a Friday night service at our church and we'd sit in one of our cars and we would just talk for hours. Because it was all we could do. We didn't want to go home. We wouldn't hang out. And one of the things that we would always talk about that always came up was we both had this desire in our hearts to be big givers. Like we wanted to give away millions of dollars. And, and at that point, like it was kind of like laughably funny or a joke that we would even be saying that.
When
like,
the
we
debt collectors are calling. It's like,
we were such a mess, but it was a seed that God had kind of planted in our heart, this desire. And, and so anyway, so the $1 million thing, it's just, it's an arbitrary number, but it's a mile marker on a journey of what God has done that we get to celebrate together, you know?
And I think everyone has this desire to be able to help other people because it gives you a sense of purpose, you know? So, I mean, ours looks, this is what ours looks like. Like, this is not what everyone's journey looks like, I don't think. I think he puts different things in different people so that we can become the body of Christ and fulfill a whole bunch of different roles that need to be filled. But I do think that there is something in everyone that says, well, you know, you find out a friend's husband just died and they have a bunch of kids and you want to be able to give towards that. Or you see what's going on in Ukraine and Russia and all this stuff. And you're like, how can I help that? Or any number of things going on in the world, both personal with like a person that you see or meet and then just global problems. Right. So I feel like we all have that thing that says, I want to be able to help somehow. You know? And I think that that's like the why behind this is that we know everyone has that. Like God puts that in our hearts for a reason. And our goal is to help people figure out how to put these two things together of praying and believing God for things that maybe you can't do on your own. But also, let's get some knowledge, let's get some education and start making better decisions and better choices. And when those two things come together, it's like then we can be the church.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Well, you know, I know there are many who are listening right now who are like, okay, this is awesome. I have that dream. I have that desire in my heart too, to be generous and to give. But with inflation and the price of gas and groceries, I'm and I haven't gotten a cost of living adjustment in years. And I don't know what is like just every year just seems like it's less and less money. I don't know how to deal with all of it. I just need to figure that out before I can give. What would you say to people who think that way, who are like, I need to figure all that out first, or even just give us some nuts and bolts of how you guys, obviously not everything, but you know, we only have another 15 or so minutes, but yeah, just give us a sense, some advice for those who are listening and in those, in that situation.
I mean, I would like, I remember that. Like, I mean, like I remember going to the gas station. I remember going to the gas station and putting like $3 in the gas tank because that was all we have. And like I remember when we first got married, like I would fast meals because our grocery budget was $40 a week.
He was fasting. He like, was like, I'm gonna fast. I'm like, okay. I
love it. Yeah, but my point is like I remember that pain. Like I remember that challenge and that difficulty. And I remember being in that situation, having this desire to give a lot and really to be able to take care of my family and my new wife and like wanting to provide her. Like I remember having all those desires and having the reality not painted the way that I wanted it. And The thing I would say is almost everything God does, you know, and I don't know if I can say everything, but like almost everything God does starts really small. It starts with a seed, you know, and that's why we named our website Seed Time. It's like this idea that God does things. He starts these really big things with this tiny little thing. And so when it comes to giving, like, I think it starts with giving, you know, and it starts with in that direction. And, you know, 2 Corinthians 9 is a great chapter to read about giving. And, you know, in the entire chapter, it's talking, it's using farming and sowing as an analogy, you know, for our giving. And, you know, and Paul says, if you sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you're going to reap bountifully. And this is just one of those things that I feel like when you start, when you kick the ball off, when you get the ball going, I don't know. It just seems like something starts kicking into motion. It moves faster than you expect, than you think. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that we did. And so getting like real specific on one thing that, and again, I'm not giving this as financial advice. This is just what the Lord led us to do. But when we were in that situation, we were paying off a whole bunch of debt. I remember like I'm the numbers nerd. I'm the spreadsheet guy. I had it all mapped out. I'm like, honey, we're going to be able to pay off our debt in 3.5 years. Okay. I have it all labeled out. This is how much we pay each month and blah, 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 blah. And somewhere along this line, Linda comes to me like all fired up and she's like, that's it. I mean, you want to just tell them?
Yeah. I kind of got this thing where it felt like we were more afraid of our debt. It was like we were afraid of being in our debt. And are in debt. And I was like, we have been focusing so much attention on this that I feel like the Lord is actually asking us to give more. So I think we should give an additional 10%. And this, Bob was like, you know, we were driving at the time and I could see his eyes. He's like, you know, knuckling the thing.
So Mike, you're throwing a wrench in my debt payoff plan here, aren't you?
He was like, okay, well, I mean, okay, let's just look at the numbers. Like, so what was great about him is that he said, let's just look. Okay, that's it. That was all he promised to do. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. He just said, let's look. And he was like, I think if we do this and this, but it's going to, you know, take away from paying off this debt. And I was like, I think we're supposed to do this.
Wow.
And we did. And
we paid the debt off like 2 years faster. Even after increasing the giving.
Which and is just not...
And when stuff like that happens, it's like...
That's not how it's supposed to be, right?
Right. Like, that's not spreadsheet math for you.
Yeah, that's not spreadsheet math.
That's like kingdom math.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, and we've just had many little instances like that where, I don't know, where things just don't make sense and we're doing the counterintuitive thing, you know, caused us to move out of that situation faster. And so, you know, and so my encouragement isn't necessarily to do that when you're paying off debt, but to follow wherever the Lord's leading and listen to and obey.
And not to be afraid of it, because oftentimes the thing that you're praying for is on the other side of your obedience to something that maybe doesn't make sense or you think will never help or never work or whatever. It's like, if you just listen, I really believe that God has strategy for everybody. For their specific situation. Like there's definitely general stuff that is a good idea for everybody. But I often think that there's even these tiny little things of like, hey, just give an extra 10%. It's like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. But okay, if I'm getting that feeling that we're supposed to do that and he says that it is even possible, like, let's just try it. Like, I mean, I think it's great. Like, we've even done this a couple times where I'm like, I feel like the Lord's leading us to do this. This doesn't make any sense, but let's do it for 2 months. And if we're not seeing any kind of difference, if this is really making things worse, then we'll stop. But let's just try it for 2 months to see what happens. Like, let's give God a chance to actually perform the miracle that we've been praying for him to do.
The wait is over. Find out what happens in the thrilling conclusion of the 12th Dead Sea Squirrels book, Babylon Breakout. Hi, I'm Mike Naraki, co-creator of VeggieTales, voice of Larry the Cucumber, and author of The Dead Sea Squirrels. Get ready for more daring rescues and hilarious jokes as Merle and Pearl and their animal friends embark on a ridiculous mission to bust the kidnapped Gomez family out of Babylon, a Bible-themed amusement park with talking animals. Young readers will love the nutty misadventures of 10-year-old Michael and his friends and will learn all about biblical life lessons such as forgiveness and friendship. Read all 12 Dead Sea Squirrels books. Available wherever books are sold.
Yeah. Well, I love how you're talking about, Linda, you were saying this is what you sensed God speaking to you, and then you brought it to Bob, and Bob didn't like shut you down right away, right? Maybe he wanted to in the moment, but he was like, well, let's just look. Yeah. And I think the curiosity piece is so key. And then you were saying also, we're not saying this is a forever thing. Let's try it and see what happens. And so it's kind of a way of, if it doesn't work out, then we can go back to or try something new. For couples who are listening, and maybe one of them is like, yeah, this is a great idea. I want to try giving 10%. And then the other, they bring it to the spouse and the other spouse is like, nope. And this becomes an issue of contention. Do you have any advice for podcast listeners who may be stepping into that situation or already in that situation?
So, well, you want us to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to be in agreement. I don't think it works if you're not in agreement. I don't think it works if I would have gone behind Bob's back and, you know, more likely it would have been him going behind my back because he sees everything. But I don't think it's the same if you're not in unity in your marriage. Like, I think that's where the power is when I think God makes us a team together.
Yeah.
And when we push things forward together, that's when you see really great things happen. And when you're pulling against each other, like that's just putting strife into your marriage, right? Like that's not following God, because this is the marriage is the thing that's the most important, right? And I think he'll work out the other details. I mean, what do you think?
No, yeah. I mean, and I think the important thing to remember here is that God put you and your spouse together for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, they are different on purpose. It's not because they're wrong. It's not because God messed up in how he made them. Like, you're together for a reason. And that was something that made such a huge difference for me, because I'm the math guy. I see the spreadsheet and I'm like, this is right. This is how the budget should be. This is how we should be spending money. And when we got married, it's like, you're wrong. I'm right. This is math. You know, like, it's just black and white. But God thankfully, you know, hit me upside the head and showed me and revealed to me a lot of her strengths and things that are actually weaknesses of mine. You know, one being just maybe enjoying life a little bit and stuff like that. And so I've grown in that. And this is something where, you know, I think both of us have improved, like where I've grown in respect for how she spends money and how she uses money. And it's like, and at the same time, she's done the same thing with me. And we found this middle balance where we both are better because of each other and because we've allowed each other to influence each other in how God created each other. So all that to say, for anybody in that situation, I think the biggest thing is fight for unity. Fight for unity. Wow. And I know that's easier said than done. I know that in some situations, like I've talked to couples, you know, and we've been through some really difficult seasons where that's just really, really hard. But continue to pray, continue to do everything you can to initiate conversations with your spouse. Like, look for opportunities to have these conversations, because so often it's just like, let's just ignore it and not talk about it and push it. And it's like, it's not going to get better by doing that. So hopefully that helps a little bit.
No, for sure. I want to return to what you mentioned before, this gap, right? These two different views. There's the wisdom of finances in the scripture, and then there's the faith aspect, right? So there are these two pieces to hold in tension, and I'd love for you to address that. But just before you do that, it's interesting. We probably have some listeners listening in who are just on a lot of different places in regards to their relationship or who they know God to be. When we open up the scriptures, we see that God is not a spite-filled, venge-filled, angry sort of God. No, God is a generous, loving, good father who says, hey, if my child asks for bread, I'm not going to give them a stone. Yeah. Right? And we read, even in that beautiful prayer from Jesus, he says, He teaches us to pray, give us today our daily bread. And we are, I mean, we're not going to share our side of this because, you know, we're interviewing you guys, but we agree with you. We agree that as we trust Jesus with our every single aspect of our life, including our finances, right? The Lord is good. God is generous. He is faithful. He is such a good God. But it's interesting because there's a lot of people inside and outside the church where they just money becomes God for them. And I love how Tim Keller talks about it. He's like, when a good thing becomes an ultimate thing, right? That's when it becomes an idol. And money is a good thing that God has given us, but it can't be an ultimate thing. Mm-hmm. And for many people, money has become that. And that's why sometimes we have some odd views about it. So we'd love for you just to share from that perspective, like, what does it look like to bridge that gap, to have a healthy biblical view, to understand the wisdom and discernment of finances, what the scriptures say about that, but then also where God says, test me, right? And this sowing and reaping principle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing that has helped me the most is just understanding that it's not mine, and that I'm just a manager. I'm just a steward. And, you know, and we've all heard this, that, you know, we're stewards, but when you actually get that and you actually understand, like, and so one of the things that we did, a lot of people track their net worth, to just see, you know, how much money they have in the bank account and all this stuff. And that's a really good financial exercise. And I recommend it. But one of the things that we did is we changed the name. Like, we don't call it our net worth because I don't like that term for a variety of reasons, but we changed it to our assets under management, because that's more accurate description of what it is. It's like the money in our bank account that God has entrusted us to manage for this short time while we're on the earth, you know, or the, you know, and this could be anything. Like, we're stewards of a lot of things, our time, our kids, and whatever else, but our money is one of those things as well. And so when we view that, like, you know, so all the money that we have, it's his assets under our management. And so if he says, go do this, like, we need to do that, because it's not ours. Right. And if we're, you know, tight-fisted and clinging to it, because this is mine and this is my retirement fund and blah, 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 blah. How dare you, God, ask me? It's like, it's all his. He's entrusting us. And if we're that, you know, five-talent steward who he can hand it to and trust that we're going to do whatever he says with it or do something with it, then, you know, I think he tends to multiply it, you know, in many cases I've seen, so that they have more to manage and deal with. Yeah. And so that's what I want to be when I grow up. That's what I'm striving for and constantly moving towards. But that perspective of understanding that I am a manager, it's all his, and I need to obey wherever he's leading, like, that has helped me a lot with that. Do you have anything you want to add?
I mean, the other thing that I feel like we've talked a lot about is that we view money as a tool. Like, instead of...
It's not a goal.
It's not being a goal.
It's a tool.
It's just a tool to get things done, which is really what it is, right? It's like, we need a house. Let's go get a house. We need a place to live. Okay. We need a car. We need to eat food. Let's do that. But if we can use it as a, or if we can see it as a tool also to fulfill our purpose, that changes how we spend it, you know? So it's a tool. So no longer am I going to use all of my tool to do one thing. I'm no longer going to use all of my tool to buy a home when I actually have to eat also, right?
Right.
And I'm no longer going to use it all on myself if it is actually to benefit others as well. If it's to start this business, if it's to get a home for my parent, my mother-in-law, because, you know, her husband passed away and she needs to live with us now, or we need to start help paying her bills, or whatever the thing may be, like, it is a tool to get that job done.
Yeah, I love that, the tool. Like, I'm just thinking a Swiss Army knife. It's like the multi-purpose tool that is needed for so many different things. And but maybe the way that you've been using it is only for one aspect. Maybe it needs to be used a little bit in a multifaceted tool way aspect.
Totally.
So for our final question, y'all, I would love if you would touch on this, because I know, I mean, stats show still that money is one of the top three reasons for people who divorce. Maybe even higher now, because there's a lot of financial stress going around around us. So for those of our podcast family who are courageous enough to ask, you know, finances are killing my marriage, what do I do? Can you give our podcast family some really practical advice that has worked for y'all?
Yeah. So first thing I'll say here is, like I mentioned before, the unity component, fight for unity. Yeah. You know, we already touched on that, so I won't go there. But as a really practical thing that I think everyone should do, you know, like we're talking about with this idea of us being managers and managers of what God has entrusted us with. If we are going to be good managers, we have to know what's going on. Like you would never hire a money manager. You would never hire someone to watch your kids if they have no idea what's going on. Like you want someone who's actually paying attention. So this is why I believe it's really important to know what's going on with our finances and to actually know how much we're spending on whatever each month. And so one of the practical exercises that I'm always recommending people do is go download an app like mint.com, personalcapital.com. They're both completely free. You can go in there, plug in your bank information, credit card information or whatever. And 15 minutes later doing all this, you can know exactly how much you spent on groceries last month. You know, you can know how much you spent eating out last month. You can know all these numbers, have them right in front of you. And what's great about this is having that information allows you to spot if there's a problem, if it's a trouble spot for you. That's because good. We talk to people all the time who will tell us, yeah, I spend about $200 a month eating out. And then they do this exercise and like, oh, it's actually $700 or $800. And it's so often that we think it's spend this much, but we don't actually know. So that's why that exercise is so important. So anybody who's not doing that, you need to start doing that. Trust me, it's going to make a big difference.
Yep, mint.com users for I don't know how many years.
Exactly. So, Linda, do you have anything that you, you'd like to add?
I mean, I think the fighting for unity piece, I think, is the biggest because that affects your whole marriage. And so I would say there needs to be a conversation about how you're going to have a conversation about money. Like, I think it needs to take a step back and go, okay, how can we talk about this without arguing? How can we talk about this without it becoming a problem? Because that's really what you're fighting for is your marriage, ultimately. Like, you're not fighting to see who's going to win. You're fighting to figure this out together. So how can you do that? Maybe you need to have some ice cream in there.
I love it.
Candy coat, the whole thing. Look, we got little visitors. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's great. It's great. Okay. I love seeing the kids in the background. Yeah, it's real life.
That's right.
Yeah. But the ice cream thing, I mean, because Lynn is someone who that works so well for. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Because you need to make it an enjoyable thing.
That's true.
So it's like, have this pre-conversation of, okay, what's going to happen when we start getting heated? Like, how do we pull each other out of it so that we can have a conversation instead of just setting each other off with every sentence we speak, you know?
Right. Yep. Yeah, no, that's really, really wise. I know some other couples who, when they feel like they're getting flooded or they feel like they're getting angry at each other or just too overwhelmed, they have like a safe word or they have like a, you know, if I need 5 minutes during this conversation to step out and get some air, this is an agreement that I'm coming back, but I just want to be able to think for myself or calm myself down. And if you have those boundaries in place before you have a tough conversation about finances or other things, then I think it'll go so much better because you're already coming from a ground of understanding each other.
Well, and on top of that, the way that we grew up, seeing how money was dealt with or not dealt with, talked with, not talked with, right? All of that is in our subconscious, right? I mean, it's a part of who we are. So don't do what we did this one time where we were about to go to bed. Don't talk about this with, you know, right before you go to bed. And one spouse has been thinking about this and wanting to bring it up. And the other is like, what is going on? We're talking about this.
I just wanted to go to bed.
I just want to go to bed. Yeah. Agree upon a time. Because we all process differently, right? So that both spouses have time to mentally prepare and prepare their hearts to have this conversation. But man, y'all are incredible. This has been such a blessing to connect with you guys. And you talked about your website too. Can you just talk to us a bit about what you guys do and just the website and how
your
people
book
connect?
That's coming out
exactly,
too.
And how people can connect with you.
Yeah, so we just finished a book. It's called Simple Money, Simple Money, Rich Life.
Copies in the mail. We're very excited.
Oh, that's really exciting to have it like a hard copy in your hands.
So that's been our last 3 years is pouring everything we can into that book.
Yeah.
But we're also podcasters. We have a podcast, Seed Time Money. And we're on Instagram, and yeah, we're just
at
doing
seed time.
Yeah, at seed time, okay. Like a seed you plant in the ground.
SEEDTIME.
And we're just doing everything we can to really, you know, kind of like we talked about. It's like, I want to see everyone in the body of Christ thriving financially. Mm-hmm. So right. Yes, we can take care of our families, we can do all this, but it's like, there's so much of the world that needs our help.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
And I'm a little bit offended that, you know, the richest top 10, you know, or 5 or 10 people in the world, like, they're not believers. And I think it should be the opposite. Like, I want to see super wealthy believers who can really use those resources to really impact the world.
Yeah.
And, but I think it only happens, and you can only do it with the right heart posture, when you understand that money's a tool and that you're a steward.
Yeah.
Because if you're chasing money just for money, or just to be on the Forbes top 10 or whatever, it's like, I don't think that's the way to do it, but there's a way to do it right. And that's what we're after. Mm-hmm.
So wonderful. Well, thank you, Bob and Linda, for being on the podcast with us.
Yeah, such an honor. Thank you, guys.
All right. Like we said before, I just wanted to keep on going.
Oh, yeah. There were so many follow-up questions
I know.
I was like, no, I need to hear more of this, but we're running out of time.
Yeah, and they didn't do the BBC thing.
Yeah.
Their kids did come in at one point, and Bob and Linda, if you're listening to this outro, y'all did incredible.
Yeah, just keep on going,
That's right.
The two things that I really enjoyed them saying, and that I will continue to think about, is looking at money as a tool and not a goal.
Yeah.
And so that it can be used in many different ways. And if both of y'all are in agreement, then it works out, right?
Yeah,
and also the other thing about that is fighting for unity, not fighting about money, fighting for unity in your marriage.
Yeah.
I think those are really two points that will continue to sit with me.
Yeah. And for me, it was that phrase assets under management instead of net worth.
That's right.
Because the net worth side of things does get to your identity. And I know I didn't talk about this lie in the book, but you are not your money.
Yeah, right.
Right. So there is that side of it. But even just biblically speaking, we are stewards. We aren't owners. But then to translate that into today's financial everyday speak, even in our Mint.com app, we have a net worth trend line that we see. And it is one of those things. And if we're not careful, we can start thinking, oh yeah, this is my worth.
Right. And it always has to go up.
Exactly. Or else how do you feel? So to actually see everything that you have as being assets under management rather than assets you own really is a compelling thought that I'm going to take away with.
Mm-hmm. Well, for all the show notes and a link to their newest book, please go to inbetween.org/episode156. And we'll also be giving away 3 copies of their brand new book. So if you're like us and you're like, I want to hear more about this, I need a few more tools in my tool belt, pick up one of their books or enter our giveaway. So maybe you'll get it for free.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time.